everybody agrees that, hey, look, we started spraying all this stuff. We started getting all these different diseases, right? It's a whole combination of lifestyle and things. But all human beings believe that if we could spray less, 80 or 90% less of what we're doing while still killing the weeds, then everybody wins.
Welcome back to the Clean Techies podcast, where we interview the top climate tech founders and investors to share their stories, advice, and lessons when it comes to building and investing in climate. Each year, about 1 billion pounds of chemicals are sprayed on crops in the U.S. alone. Globally, that number is around 5.6 billion. Our guest today is AgTechLogic, and they are solving this problem. They do this by helping farmers retrofit their existing machinery with precision sprayers that use computer vision to identify weeds and spray only the weeds, in a way that is concentrated enough that it kills a weed, but it doesn't overlap onto the crops. Today, nearly all farmers do broadcast spraying, or in other words, spraying everything. By implementing this tech, farmers can save a lot of money, especially on the chemicals and the water involved, and we can have a healthier produce. Enjoy the episode, and don't forget to stick around for our takeaway section at the end of the show.
All right, Tom, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Alex, for joining, for allowing me to join.
Yeah, no, man. This is our pleasure. I really like what you're doing. Obviously, you guys are a little earlier than some of our recent guests, but I really like the technology and kind of being from the Midwest as well. I like the agriculture space. Both my parents grew up as farmers, so I'm pretty excited for this. Oh, nice. Give us a quick intro to yourself. You know, what are you doing today with AgTechLogic?
No, appreciate that. So at the highest level, our focus is on reducing the amount of chemicals that we overspray today. There's a lot of chemicals oversprayed in the use of killing weeds, and then also on crops and so forth. And so we're really trying to help integrate intelligent precision spray technology and platforms to reduce the amount of chemical overuse and to help improve soils, improve health, and improve climate, impact.
Yeah. So talk us a little bit more. So when you say that you're creating like a precision platform, helping, that's a lot of buzzwords. So you're helping, companies who have tractors or spray kind of devices, and you're helping them spray less of that. So it's still getting the job done, but just more accurately and, less materials used.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, the ultimate goal for a farmer is they have to get rid of the pests, and the largest pests they have is weeds. And so we started with the focus on helping them to still kill weeds, but use less herbicide in that process. And we're pretty different than a lot of others in the fact that we retrofit. So we'll take existing sprayers or any type of vehicle, and we can add technology on it within just a couple of days and make it an intelligent precision spray platform. And you're right, that sounds a little bit, techy, but really what it is in today's world, farmers fill up a big tank, they open up spigots and basically spray everything. It's called broadcast spraying. Also, that you might hear the term burn down. You try to spray everything, including the ground around, therefore you eliminate all the weeds. Well, our technology will precisely locate if there's a weed there or a plant, and we can talk about how that differentiates. And it will precisely just spray that. And we can see up to a 90% reduction in herbicide use while still eliminating the weed.
This is pretty cool. I mean, I think it's I'm not extremely in touch with all of the ag tech space, but my understanding is a lot of people have just been trying to make better products to spray so that it's, getting the job done. But I think that we could maybe discuss this later, that has a number of issues with it, right? Still using a lot of water, the plants can, maybe it's not getting the job done. So we can talk about that more, but this is quite interesting. I guess the first thing that stands out to me when I was doing the research for this is, when I look at your background, I guess I wouldn't have initially thought, hey, he's going to found an ag tech company. So can you kind of talk about, why'd you do this and what was the idea and how did this all originate?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And appreciate that question. Similar to you, my grandfather was a farmer. He grew up in Wisconsin. He did corn. He did some other fruit, vegetables up there too, but corn and dairy was his focus. And then my dad became a farmer, partially because he grew up on the farm and realized that, farming's really hard. Ended up moving to Chicago. So I ended up growing up on the south side of Chicago, went to the University of Illinois. I was the first person in my family to actually go to college. So pretty proud of that. My I got my degree in chemical engineering. At the same time, I actually joined the Army, and my specialty was nuclear biological chemical specialist. So my job was actually to understand chemical deployments, biological warfare, nuclear deployments, how they affect people and health and all of that. And so it was kind of the combination of I loved chemistry. I understood where it could go. And so in the process, I ended up spending 6 years at Procter & Gamble doing research and development, got a couple of patents, loved the thought of just solving problems. I mean, what's the problem? How do you solve it? I ended up switching careers just a little bit in the sense of how does that technology solving those problems? And I spent almost 20 years as a consultant. And through that journey of a consultant, I ended up consulting for companies like Archer Daniels Midland, CGB, Cargill, some of the largest agriculture companies that were out there. Then I got an opportunity to actually run an agriculture software company for 2 years, and I really enjoyed it. And I kind of got the buzz back of, hey, there's a lot of problems in agriculture. And then Silas, interesting enough, a good friend of mine who happened to be a Boy Scout parent, and I was running Boy Scouts, he's an agronomist. He and I were just chatting. I had moved to Phoenix at the time, and he and I were talking about some of the problems with farmers. And he said, Tom, the big problems we have are weeds, water, and labor. And I literally threw up my arms and I'm like, we could solve these things. I'm an engineer. Let's go solve these things. And so it was just really a culmination of, you know, thinking about what are the challenges my grandfather and father had when they were talking about that when I was growing up. And I spent a little bit of time on the farm during the summer. And then getting to that point in my life where I'm like, I want to make a bigger impact. And how do I make a bigger impact? And, you know, I said, I'm going to go do the agriculture challenges. So I stopped consulting. And I said, I'm going to start my own company and solve these problems. And I do believe that if you can solve the problem for the grower, for the farmers, and I find out that our technology transcends just farmers, it goes into municipality and government and rail, anything that you spray, we believe in AgTechLogic, you can spray with precision. And then you can spray with intelligence. And that is, can I get data while I'm doing this? Can I get information and data off the ground and off the crops and off the trees while we precision spray, reduce herbicide and chemical use to then provide data and information to farmers to tell them things they didn't know? And I'll leave you with one story, but there's a dozen, which is one farmer just recently said, Tom, while you're spraying, can you see if we have puddling, water puddling on the ground? Maybe I have an irrigation problem. And if your camera and your technology can pick up that I have that problem, then I can go send a guy out there to fix it. And I save water, you know, I solve a problem. And we said, yes, we can look at the ground, provide you information on weeds, on crops, on pests, and therefore give you that data. And therefore you can make your whole operations more efficient and make your crops better.
Yeah. This is fascinating. I love the part of the story where you just said, hey, you know, I can solve this. I guess, was this, you had a long career doing these things. Was this like super obvious to you when you heard this, that you kind of immediately connected the dots and said, I think there's solutions to those problems that I know of already? Or was it more of, hey, I understand that those are problems and I'm pretty sure I can solve them. Let me go figure that out.
It honestly was really kind of a combination of the both. My chemical engineering background was thinking like, hey, I want to get back into things where I can really use that. And secondly, it was my friend I was talking with, you know, at the time, who said, hey, there's some technologies that's emerging. And so I did a bunch of research. And in the process of doing that research, I focused on precision spraying because I'm like, hey, I understand the chemical engineering. I understand the chemistry portion of this. I think this is something, as the technology is growing so quickly, we're able to gather more data faster. AI was coming on board. Imaging was coming on board. I said, I know we can put this together and really solve those problems. So it was really a combination of both my nerd side coming out, my engineering side coming out, and then talking with somebody who was on the ground, boots dirty, talking with farmers saying, this is a problem. And if you solve that problem, we've got a business relationship. And I ended up speaking to several growers at the time. And I literally said, hey, if I could solve that for you, would you pay for it? And I was like, hey, and honestly, Silas, I said, I'm going to start this. I'm hoping to be able to make a living at it, you know, in the process. Yeah. So
we are excited to announce that we have launched a Patreon. You can find this newly linked in our Substack and audio platform descriptions. We are both really just so grateful for each and every one of you and wanted to create a way to interact with you and for you to support us on our journey as we continue and try to talk to the best people doing amazing things in climate tech. We do all of this on the time we can muster outside of our day jobs, so any support means the world. Now, gushing over, back to the show.
So it sounds like you basically went full send before you fully clarified that people were willing to pay. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
I love these stories. I mean, like, some people may not understand it, but for me, when you mentioned that you think of the idea and it comes to you and you're like, oh, I can solve that. And you said the word nerd, right? I wouldn't necessarily always call people that, but if they call themselves, like, I call myself the same, right? It's like you just got to solve it, right? You love it. You get excited about it. Right? When I talk to my wife about new technology, she's like, man, you should have been an engineer. So I guess this is interesting. Along the way, what were the key things that you did to validate it was like the right path and to continue? Because usually very, very early, that's super important, is understanding, will people actually pay for it? Was it just word of mouth? Or did you actually get people to sign LOIs? Like, how did you go about that initial discovery process?
Well, it first started with the fact that I was talking with an agronomist who was working with farmers and growers at the time, and they were talking about, and this was, you know, this is early, well, it was 2019, and prices had started going up in 2020. They really took off, the prices for herbicides really took off, and part of it was the pandemic and some of the global economy stuff that was happening. So it was really a combination of two things. Number one, I was doing a lot of research, doing a lot of reading, understanding the market, looking at different technologies. I started understanding what John Deere was doing and said, you know, I honestly said, hey, they're doing some great stuff, but I got a different idea. I'm like, I think we can go down a little bit different path and maybe solve this a different way. And that's where AgTechLogic has moved towards. But it was also talking with agronomists, talking with actual growers, and then putting some dollars at it. And we actually ended up creating a demonstration vehicle with the technology. And we partnered with an existing sensor company that had a sensor in the market already working in Europe and Australia. And Silas, part of this was me thinking about this and saying, why isn't the US doing this? You know, we currently in the US, we spray over 2 billion pounds of herbicide in the United States. Herbicide alone, that's not including all the other chemicals used for, you know, in fertilizer, biostimulants, and so forth. And so I looked at that and I said, this makes so much sense. And my military background too, Silas, kind of came in. And, you know, I was in the military for 10 years back in the day where Gulf One came out. And we went from, and I'm a little bit of a historian, World War II, we did a lot of carpet bombing, right? I mean, that's like broadcast spraying. And then by a little bit after 9/11, you started to see precision bombing. And so, you know, and part of me was like, wow, the technology, if we can drop a bomb with precision within meters, why couldn't we drop, chemical, okay, herbicide within centimeters or millimeters? And I found out that some people were working on it. So we ended up partnering with a company called Ramatron and Agritech America. They brought a sensor in here, which is called Weed It. And so we started with the Weed It technology. And at that time, we actually looked at multiple sensors and what was in the market. We found out that sensor just happened to be awesome. A chlorophyll fluorescent sensor that we use. And so we combined that with our demonstration. We showed it to a grower. We started working with that grower. And within just a couple of days, he came back and he's like, Tom, I used to spray. It used to take me 8 days to spray. And now I can spray in 2 because I don't have to go back and refill. And he goes, I used to use 500 gallons of mix. And now I use 200 gallons of mix. And that was pretty much early on. That was one of our very first trials. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is real. And that grower out here in Phoenix said, yeah, that's a big deal. I'm saving on herbicide. I'm saving on labor. You know, I've got a lot more time on my hands because I don't have to keep driving back to the barn, refilling, and then going back to the spot where I was spraying. And so because he validated that, I said that we've got something, you know, and so
it's worth it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's if the impacts are so big, it's very difficult to assume, you know, that to be like, oh, let's go check it with 16 other people. Right. Like, let's just get going. So, okay. I like this a lot. Let's go in. Let's shift a little bit. I'm going to talk about some data points. So you mentioned a couple of things already. We talked, you mentioned, you said 2 billion pounds of herbicides are sprayed in the U.S. or globally?
Just U.S. alone, and somewhere north of 7 billion pounds globally.
And so maybe you have some insights on this, but something I've, like my brief research, again, I'm not an expert, a lot of people have concern about kind of increased usage of any kind of pesticide on plants, especially food, right? Because we're consuming it. And there's this idea that the plants are essentially evolving to become more resistant to these, and then you start using more. Can you maybe talk just a little bit about this, like the whole problem which is we're spraying on everything, and this is causing this certain effect?
So you're absolutely right. So that the term is considered herbicide resistance. So herbicide resistant weeds is pretty normal. I'm going to hit two aspects that you talked about. So let me hit that one first. So yes, we've sprayed in broadcast mode for 100 plus years, and it continues to be a concern that we're using the same chemical over and over and the weeds aren't dying. So now we need to come up with new combinations of chemicals in order for that to happen. Many of those combinations and many of the materials that are being created, and by the way, some of them are organic, some of them are really, really interesting that'll be coming out, and we're talking with some of those companies. When you make those new materials, they're typically more expensive, Silas, which doesn't help, farmers if you tell them, hey, we got a better herbicide, but it's two or three times more expensive. You know, that's a hard thing for a grower to digest and say, well, I can barely afford what I'm paying now. But if you came forward to them and said, hey, it's more expensive, but you're only going to spray 10 or 20% of it, then the math starts to work out, right? Then now that growers can actually look at different combinations of herbicides or materials, cocktails, that will actually be effective in reducing weeds and could actually be healthier. And that's the other side of the equation. Nearly every day we're seeing and, finding articles around the combination around, people writing about health. The fact that we've used so many chemicals over the years, there's a lot of studies that are connecting some of those materials to health issues. There's a lot of a lot of conflict around whether it's true or not and everything, but primarily everybody agrees that, hey, look, we started spraying all this stuff. We started getting all these different diseases, right? It's a whole combination of lifestyle and things. But all human beings believe, though, if we could spray less, it doesn't really matter what it is, right? If we could spray less, 80 or 90% less of what we're doing while still killing the weeds, then everybody wins. Farmers reduce, their usage. Our fruits and beverages have better products and healthier things that we can eat. And we believe the future is going to be new products that come out that are absolutely healthier. They may be more expensive, but if you spray them with precision, you can actually afford doing it. And actually, it could be even more affordable doing it, because if you get higher quality products, people typically will pay for a better quality product. And we're seeing that across different, a lot of different industries, in agriculture.
Yeah. So one thing I want to understand you mentioned there was some hardware out there. There were some things that were already happening. Overall, though, most people are not using precision spraying, correct? Like, this is a relatively new thing for, large farming.
Precision spraying is fairly new. Precision agriculture has been talked about for over 20 years, which is, how do we get more precision? And it started with, a lot of that started with planting. Can we precision plant? Can we precision fertilize? And, are there different ways in there? But precision spraying is fairly new. Right now, the research shows that likely less than 3%-ish of all of the United States is using some type of precision spraying in agriculture. And outside of agriculture, Silas, because, the federal government sprays for weeds, every municipality sprays for weeds, rail companies spray for weeds. I mean, big corporate that have, thousands of retail stores, they're spraying for weeds and grasses around their properties. So there's a lot of even non-agriculture, and they primarily, very, very small amount of that is actually sprayed with precision. So we believe that, again, our technology is going to really provide that capability to retrofit any type of equipment to go into precision spraying. So we're hoping to see a big increase in that as people start to get educated that the technology, it now works. It works really well, and it's maturing very quickly. And we're seeing that even with the use of, applying new AI, to the model.
Interesting. So I guess where I want to go from here is, if I understand correctly, when people are spraying chemicals, there's always some sort of mixture of water and the chemicals, right? And then they're kind of spraying it across things. Is that accurate?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. So then do you have any case studies or examples of so far? Again, it's probably going to vary depending on the crop and everything, but how much people are spraying per acre per day, and how much you're able to reduce by using your technology?
We do. We've got actual customer, data and trials. So we actually run a couple of trials with the University of Arizona. We're actually collaborating with a couple of different universities, now. But again, we've got actual testimonials from growers in different crop combinations using this technology. And they're seeing, anywhere from, even in some really difficult cases of a lot of weeds, they're still seeing anywhere from 25 to 95% reduction. And so, but typically we're going to see somewhere in the order of 70 to 90% reduction in the use cases that we're going after, which is a really large, savings to the grower and improvement in soil health.
So if you're saving them, let's call it on the low end, right? 75% usage, what's the actual savings in terms of dollars for them on a daily basis?
Sure. So again, different crop combinations have different prices, but integrated pest management typically is costing a grower about $135 an acre. And of that, the two big pieces are chemical and really not the water piece of it. It's just really chemical and labor. And so a combination of that can actually see a savings in an ROI that will actually show them within that sprayer a return within 12 to 18 months. And so the dollar amount could be, depending on, I'll give you one clear example. We have one grower, very large winemaker in California, that was telling us that they were saving over $2,500 per day in chemical use.
Wow.
And that's just chemical. So that's not even including the fact that they're going to, they get a labor improvement because it was every 90 minutes they were using an entire tank, Silas. Now it takes them 6 hours to use an entire tank. So think about the time of having to stop what you're doing at every 90 minutes, drive back to the barn, refill. Okay, that's all lost time, right? So they are now much more productive, and so therefore they actually, will see an improvement in their labor cost also.
Hey guys, we need your help with something. In order to better understand what you like most about the show, what you dislike, and how we can help you, please take 7 minutes to fill out our listener survey if you haven't already. It only takes about 7 minutes, but it will drastically improve our ability to give you the best content that you're looking for. Thanks for your help. Now back to the show. I mean, not to mention, though, there's also the huge benefit of, I know you mentioned this, not necessarily a huge cost, but the water savings, right? So there's a lot of concern with certain places now with water scarcity, and that's going to become probably a more common thing. But also, if you look at the large corporates who are trying to become more sustainable, it's all about reducing energy uses and water usage. So this could be, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? If these companies who are producing goods have committed to net zero, this is table stakes, right? You gotta sign up.
Correct. We agree. And that's why the interesting thing is we've never had a single person say, Tom, you're crazy. What are you trying to do? It won't work. Like, we don't get any of that. The only objection we get is, farmers really like to see you prove it with their crops. Okay. And so they ask specific things like, have you proven it in, for example, in Phoenix, in this condition, in this crop combination? It's like, not yet, but we'd like to with you, right? So early adoption is hard for growers because there's a lot of risk, right? If it doesn't work, they're like, hey. But the nice thing is our technology has very little risk in the fact that we've got different modes. You can still press a button and still broadcast, or you can press a button and have what we call hybrid mode or PWM, which allows the ability that you can have actually you can actually have a small level of herbicide being sprayed while still spot spraying, or you can go to a spot spray mode and see maximum savings. And so we try to work with those growers to make sure we minimize that risk in getting out there. But to your water point, you're absolutely right. So you're going to see, as part of that, you're going to see a massive reduction. Again, the same 75 to 95% reduction in water, because that's the majority of the mix that you're using. In addition to that, you're not going to have water refill tanks come back out. And if you're actually effectively using precision spray, we've got a grower who's told us that they're seeing less regrowth. Meaning, so if you think about it, Silas, if you take 1 gallon of herbicide and you have to spray it over an entire acre, that's a very little amount of herbicide hitting everything on the ground, right? But if you take 1 gallon of herbicide and you precisely direct it to the weed that you need to hit, you can get the right dosage at the right time, at the right place, and therefore it dies faster. And if it dies faster and it's more efficient and more effective, then it doesn't regrow sooner. And so what that grower is seeing is that with precision spraying, they're not having to come back as often because it's, the weeds are dying.
I mean, then you're even increasing the outcomes, right? That's quite interesting. I guess you mentioned that people are a little bit skeptical, that they want to try it on their crops first, right? How did you land this first pilot? Because it's usually quite difficult to get somebody to commit to that. Can you talk a little bit about that process and maybe the meta of doing it so that other entrepreneurs can kind of learn from that experience?
Yeah, the nice thing was is a friend of mine had connection to growers, so he's actually worked with them and been an advisor and agronomist with them for several years. And so he was able to talk to them and say, hey, can we come in with our demonstration sprayer and show you what we're doing? And, when you have that level of trust with a grower, you get in and do that. And so some of the early trials was just because we knew people. Our largest customer, which happens to be one of the largest growers on the planet, we got in through a conversation. And they looked at it really not from a technical perspective. They had heard about precision spraying, but looked at it from a financial perspective and said, hey, Tom, even if you're half right, we still think that this is a viable technology that we want to move forward with. And so they actually did a financial calculation. They then agreed to purchase a couple of sprayers with us. They ran that in trials for an entire season. Almost a full year from the point of starting to spray weeds to the end, did all the calculations, and then they came back and said, yep, you're right, we saved, we want to continue. So now they're adding more technology and have put more purchase orders in front of us. And so we're expanding that relationship. But, many farmers want to see that. They want to see a trial, whether it be at a university or with somebody else. They want to see it working before they try it, with their crops. So it takes a bit of that cycle to get going. But once you prove it out, and if you do prove it out and you do what you say, they're going to continue, to move forward with the technology.
Yeah. I mean, early on, that's where the hustle aspect comes in, right? But you mentioned something like you said, we happen to just have some relationships. I think that that's a good thing. And people need to recognize this, that even though you were like, I can't say there's anything special about it, it is special because people having relationships is extremely important to success in this industry, right? You look at your hiring practices, for example. You want people who already have relationships because, this is a human business, especially when it comes to farming, right? Farmers are, I guess, from my experience, usually quite skeptical of people just coming in from the outside and be like, hey, I'm going to sell you something, right? They've gotten, taken advantage of several times. So they're like, hey, I'm not going to have this happen again. So I think it's an important point to mention for other entrepreneurs is have the right people who already have some type of experience. Speaking on that, I wanted to ask you, this wasn't part of my prep, but if you're open to speaking about it, can you talk about being somebody who has had a much longer career than most, innovators or early entrepreneurs, and then going into the entrepreneurship land? Was there any particular apprehension you had to that or any big challenges that you've run into having had a career behind you? You obviously have a lot of experience, but I just saw a post about this on LinkedIn where somebody is like, hey, a lot of entrepreneurs who actually really succeed tend to do this later in their career, but it's always kind of treated as a young person's game. So can you talk a little bit about that experience if you're open to it?
Oh, absolutely. Again, ask me any question you want. I've dabbled with entrepreneurship my entire life, but never really jumped in 100%. You know, and part of it was, you know, growing a family. And, you know, you get in with a couple of really good companies that I worked for in the past. I mean, I got the opportunity to work at Procter & Gamble, again, a really prestigious company. Deloitte, also another very well-respected company, and was doing some great work. And so I always felt a bit of that anyway. I've always treated things as kind of entrepreneurial, but also my own business and what I was doing. So to take the leap, absolutely. It was a little bit less risk in the sense that my kids had already grown up. So I was at the point in my life was I was like, okay, they're out of school. I don't, you know, well, some of them were still in college at the time, but, you know, for the most part, I didn't have the same level of responsibilities. And I looked at it and I said, here's my opportunity to go after that. And, you know, so, but yeah, was there some apprehension? Absolutely. Challenges? Oh, I can't. We'd be on here all day talking about the challenges. But yeah, you look at it and you say, hey, I could spend the rest of my life in a career and a job, or I can actually, you know, look to be that entrepreneur and do it myself. And I felt that I had enough connections and relationships around me that were very supportive of doing this. And I actually felt more comfortable, you know, at the age of 50 doing it than, you know, when I was 20, you know, kind of rolling the dice and doing it. You know, plus, again, I felt that, again, if you solve a problem that's real and you get those folks around you that support that problem and you know you're really solving a true, real problem, I do believe that you can make a living out of doing it.
I think it's worth just highlighting one of my thoughts initially on this is, there's a lot of people who don't pursue entrepreneurship later on because they've been on a track. Yes, maybe they have more stability and there's more quote unquote reasons why they should be able to say, hey, these concerns aren't really a concern anymore. I'm going to go do this. But a lot of times they're down their route of their career so far that they decide, hey, it's not worth going backwards, right? It's not worth starting from the beginning. But the people who have experience have a higher chance of success because they know things, right? They know people, they have connections, etc. So worth highlighting that, and I appreciate, you know, hearing the stories of people doing that. So one thing I wanted to go back to a little bit, which was you mentioned early on tracking data on like what the farmers want on the ground, what are we seeing, etc. Is this new data that hasn't really been collected before? Is this something that you're totally adding that's like a whole new data set for people, or is it just enhanced?
The answer is yes, yes, and yes. So yes, it's new data. Yes, it's never been collected before. And yes, it's new product that we've come out with. And so we've deployed a product called Agtelio and Agtelio I. So we wrote our own entire farm command center, which allows us to then get data off of precision spraying and beyond. And so we've got a very collaborative software stack that we created and an app that we've just deployed just a couple of weeks ago. And that allows the grower to see things on any device, okay? And they can, you know, look at their phone and see everything that's happening on their sprayer. And so whether you have a 20 or 30-year-old sprayer, you give me 2 days, Silas, and I can put the technology on there to precision spray and Agtelio on there to give you all the data that's coming off of that sprayer in your hands in near real time. And that includes such as how much herbicide am I spraying, what rate am I spraying, my flow rates, exact GPS coordinates of what my route is, images of things that are on the ground. So if I want to look at weeds or crops or, you know, anything, you know, that's happening on the ground, eventually we'll be adding cameras and images to look at crops and trees, you know, to get information off of there. So we believe the data side is far, even far more valuable than just precision spraying. So we think starting out with precision spraying and saving herbicide and making a huge, you know, dent in the amount of, you know, chemicals we spray is huge, is massive. But the data side is even more valuable, which is really hard to say because we know that we'd like to see all that, you know, chemical, you know, reduction. But getting that data provides the growers stuff that they just don't have today. I mean, they're out there and many of their operators that are spraying, and this, no, you know, this is just the way it is. I mean, they put their iPods in, you know, and they're driving down the field and they're spraying, okay, and you know, they're going along doing what they've been asked to do. Well, our technology can capture everything off the ground and everything that's happening with that sprayer and deliver it right to the grower or to the controller or CFO of a big organization and tell them exactly everything that's happening. And it's super clear and super easy for them to read. So today, a lot of growers, you know, when they have operators or applicators that are spraying, they look at a tank and they go, okay, I just filled it with 500 gallons. I wrote down, you know, what I'm going to do. And then when they're done, they go, okay, I used 200 gallons and they throw a piece of paper in and, you know, somebody eventually takes that piece of paper, sends it to somebody. They go, okay, we used 200 gallons. Well, now they get all of that data near real time, you know, in the format that they like it. And then they can make decisions on that data. Yeah. So if they find or alert something on the ground, we can actually alert them that, hey, something happened.
Yeah, and it's also valuable for anybody wanting to report their emissions tracking and all these things. Like, there's so many other things. I'm assuming at some point you'll integrate if you haven't already done that. The question I do have, though, is on the IP. So you mentioned that you found somebody who had a sensor that was pretty good, and you know, you kind of put these things together. Where is the IP and the moat in all of this?
Yeah, so we've now wrapped additional IP around that sensor. So the WIDA technology, we're still deploying. That is the core technology that helps us reduce the chemical use. And it's a phenomenal sensor. We think it's the best combination in the market is the use of the WIDA sensor along with Agtelio to gather all that data around there. So we added hardware and software around that sensor, which now gives us the ability to add that in a retrofit, a very affordable manner. Very quickly, it's easy to maintain, very easy for growers to understand and operate. And so we've gone a little bit different direction than some of the competition, which many of those competitions that are out there trying to go after weeds, I mean, are seven figures, you know, to buy a multi-million dollar piece of equipment. And we find that, you know, 95% of growers can't afford that. But they look at a retrofit and they like their sprayer they've been using for 5 or 10 years. And we tell them, hey, look, give us 2 days. We'll put the tech on it. You're going to save 80, 90% in herbicide use. You're not going to get all this data off of there. And they kind of look at us like, really, you can do that? We're like, yes. It doesn't matter if it's a 120-foot boom. It doesn't matter if it's a side-by-side, you know, a pickup truck that you're using for side of the road. Whatever it might be, we can add the technology on there and give you near real-time data along with the savings.
Yeah, this is great. These platform plays are quite interesting. So, I also just love the physical aspect. I mean, like the idea that okay, we've now got this. Let's go, you know, get these tractors, these trucks, and we're gonna retrofit them and actually do some real labor, along with the tech. It's just my favorite thing. let's go to funding. So you guys have raised some funding so far. Can you just talk about generally speaking your fundraising journey and sure. You know, what were the milestones you hit and what was required in order to raise kind of each level?
Yeah, I'd really say we've had three different sections and, you know, I'll share with you overall. So as of today, we've raised $1.8 million. It didn't, you know, start out that super easy, but I have to admit I was very blessed. And this is where Silas talked about having that career and creating relationships over your time. So when I started with the vision of, here's what I want to create. I'm going to create a company that's going to reduce herbicide use by 90%. And I showed that vision. I honestly had friends that literally pulled their checkbook out and wrote me a check and said, here you go, Tom. And I you know, there were a couple of times, Silas, I literally said, wait a second, I don't even have paperwork. Like, guys, hold on, you know. but they're like, you know, and again, I'm very blessed with some of those early investors who said, hey, Tom, I know you. I know what you've done over 30 years. You know, I trust you. Here you go. I know you're going to do good things with this money. Go get it started. And then tell me, you know, how much do I own of the company? You know, they had that much faith in me. And then I met a few folks, you know, as part of that early journey who were just super excited about what I was doing. And I had one gentleman, you know, write a check for six figures and said, I love this. This is great. You know, I want to own part of your company. And so here you go. And so then I honestly had to start figuring out, okay, how do you actually raise capital? How you do it with all the right legal paperwork? I had to get an attorney and get some support and say, okay, guys, how do I take in this money and do that? So that was the first round. I then went to and talked to a friend of mine about what I was doing. And he stepped in and he said, Tom, this is a phenomenal concept, love what you're doing. He was semi-retired at the time. He's like, I want to be your advisor helper. And so he actually jumped on board. We created an advisory group in January of 23. And at that point, things took off. And so he's really helped. He helped me raise another $1.2 million, you know, from that period of time, in addition to helping us go into further rounds. And so I will say that, yes, it's hard. But, you know, again, if you have a great solution, you have a great story, if you're willing to share it, people will come forward. But you need to also get, you know, trusted partners around you that can help expand your circle to other investors and angels that want to support, you know, what you're doing. And so we've been been fortunate. And so we're finishing up round now, a 10 million valuation round today. We'll finish that up probably within the next week. And we'll look at what we do later this year. We'll probably open up a new round later this year.
Yeah, this is great. I think not to try to add anything, because you've said a lot of great things. The people who tend to have the easiest time raising have some sort of relationships or experience, right? It's when you're very young, you don't know a whole lot, you got energy, you got ideas, but it's quite difficult to raise. I mean, people who have that experience, that relationship, it's super, super valuable. So I just encourage other people listening to maybe consider the patience or people who maybe have not considered going out on their own, but they see a challenge, consider doing it. Because if you've built a good career, you might be able to do it slightly easier than other people.
And it's that combination, you know, Silas, that I was told, because I've asked some of the investors who've really come forward and helped us when we needed some cash. And they said, Tom, it was really two things. Number one, it's we know you. I mean, so, you know, again, I think that whether you're 25 or 50, I mean, if you put together just you do what you say you're going to do and you do it, whether it's, you know, good or bad, I think that people then trust you. But then two, have a great idea that you're really passionate about.
So. Yeah. What are the next steps? Like, what does the future look like? You're about to close this round. What's your go-to-market look like? What are you excited for?
Well, first of all, I get excited every day. I wake up like this and so much energy. And I know this is a, you know, podcast versus video, but I mean, those that know me, I don't drink any coffee. I'm literally excited about this every day because I wake up every day going, our company is focused on reducing, our big goal is by December 2028 to reduce 1 billion pounds of herbicide use. I mean, that's a huge goal, but it is absolutely possible. And so I wake up every day going, how do we help get that done? And again, I'm an engineer. Every day, it's really about solving problems. So our next step is to continue to expand wisely. You know, I say that because you don't want to get out over your skis with farmers. You have to be really honest with them. What is working? What is not working? What are you trialing, you know, with them? And make sure they're very clear on what you're doing with them so they don't get the feeling like you're just experimenting on them. You know, so you'll get some growers along the way that'll say, hey, I'll let you trial over here, but over here we have to use what is proven. And so just be very brutally honest, be very fair about pricing as we're growing. But the biggest next step is we want to get the message out, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity here to get the message out that the technology is here. And I'll leave you, you know, with this story I thought was interesting. One of our guys attended a pesticide, you know, regulation meeting in California just a couple months ago. And some of the folks were in there talking about, hey, we would like to reduce pesticide use by 5% over the next 20 years. And, you know, our operations lead happened to be at that meeting, and he got up to the mic and, you know, he got his 3 minutes in and he said, guys, do you understand that we have technology today that can see 90% reductions today? Not like in 20 years, like immediately, like we could do this overall much faster. And, you know, through that right partnership, you know, public-private partnership and getting the education out that the technology is here and it's affordable, it's got a great return, it makes an impact on the environment. We think that message has just got to get out faster. So that's our biggest thing we're trying to focus on is how do we get the message out faster? And then scaling is going to be our biggest challenge is because we think that as that starts to happen, as the federal government starts to look at, okay, what are ways that we can have that right partnership with both farmers, municipalities, government? I mean, the government today spends over $1 billion, Silas, on spraying herbicide across all of its properties, you know, so that's a lot. And we think, you know, I think as a taxpayer, like, hey, I can help reduce that and make the environment better at the same time. And so we're going to continue to push forward with, you know, finding the right customers, continuing to, you know, expand our technology. Our technology, our R&D group is growing. We want to be known that we're creating new innovations and new products in the market that are easy to apply, easy to operate, affordable for farmers. And that's where we're going to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, this is awesome. I mean, there's a lot of things you said today that I really resonate with, that resonate with me. The last one that you mentioned was the responsible growth. I think it's very difficult to, when you're building a startup, to consider the idea of, you know, maybe tapping the brakes, right? You don't want to slow down, but you need to be responsible, especially when your customers are of a certain caliber. I think that across climate tech, you've got a number of types of people like this, right? Industry, farming, utilities. The word innovation isn't necessarily their friend, right? They don't, innovation equals risk, or, you know, all these different things, and they need the risk to be gone. They need it to be de-risked so they can try it. So I really appreciate your wisdom and how you're looking at these things. And I'm very excited to see how your next steps go. Where should people reach out?
Oh, appreciate that. So agtechlogic.com. So agtechlogic.com. You know, please check us out. Follow us. We are on YouTube and X and Instagram and Facebook. So you can find us out there and see some of our stories, hear some of our testimonials, you know, join. And I really love the fact that I'm working in an area of technology that fits all people. Silas, yeah. It'd be everybody. I mean, there's everything that we do is supported by, interesting, when I was talking to someone up in Washington, they're like, hey, we got to talk to D's and R's, right? Both Democrats and Republicans. And I'm like, hey, the good news is, guys, our technology affects everybody. Everybody wants to help farmers. Everybody wants better food. Everybody wants better beverages. They want better products in the store. They also want farmers to make a living. You know, we're losing too many farms too fast today. And so if we can help farmers save money, make more money by also creating better environment and soil climate along the way, we can do that. And it's all in combination. So that's why we've never really had anybody kind of, you know, put the stop sign on us. It's like, hey, this makes sense. And like you said, like, why isn't everybody doing this? Well, I think it's just a matter of getting them educated that it exists. We talked to a professor just 2 days ago, was very familiar with, you know, one of the competition's technologies, didn't know we existed. I'm like, well, we're still small. You know, we're trying to get the word out there that we can actually do that. And the technology has matured now that we can do it and do it faster. So,
yeah. No, I think just encourage everybody, especially farmers, to reach out. It's always worth understanding these things, right? I know there's always some skepticism there, but if the savings are this large, like, it's super, super worth it, right? So even for relatively small farms, I'm assuming there's a huge amount of savings. So reach out today, and really appreciate you coming on, Tom. This has been a pleasure.
Silas, thank you very much.
Hey there. Thanks so much for listening to the episode today. If you made it this far, and if this is your first time making it this far, this is the part of the show where we share our takeaways. And I have to say, today's episode was extremely fun. Here are the things that really stood out to me. So first is, experience is a superpower when you have put a premium on doing good work and building relationships. Because of his relationships, he understood the potential of the idea. Because they had good relationships, they landed their first pilot. And because of the combination of experience and relationships, they also landed their first investors. I think the note to take away is, if you're someone, especially at the front end of your career, remember that the experience you gain over time will help you, but especially if you're intentional about building the relationships along the way, and most importantly, if you do good work. Secondly, his focus on responsible growth. I think with startups, this is not usually something, you know, you see, but it's come up more recently with kind of the funding environment and just making sure you're responsible with burn. But we have seen this with utilities and industrial sectors on the podcast in the past. And now today we're talking about it with growers or farmers. And sometimes, basically, the takeaway is, sometimes you have to, let's call it, curtail your growth so that it is responsible and at a pace that your customers are comfortable with. if you're trying to go faster than they're willing, you're going to have a, you know, a tough time making it happen. So when you're planning, ensure that you understand your customer's tolerance for speed and innovation and change so that you can do it in a responsible way with them and partner with them. Finally, humility. This is something that stood out to me today. Despite, you know, having technology that, you know, I guess you could say on the surface might make him want to feel like he's come up with the best thing since sliced bread, he's humble enough to work with the growers in baby steps to respect their process. I think too many entrepreneurs do not have this humility. They just want to rush things through, do it their way. So this is quite refreshing and it's really great to see. All right, that's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. See you on the next episode.